Hello and welcome to a new edition of Charity Pulse, your regular update on news and happenings in the charity sector. I'm James Saunders, I'm a partner at Morkings & Smith, and I'm joined as ever by my co-hosts, Catherine Rastromji, partner and head of charities at Shakespeare Martineau, and Charles Mosqueta, charities director at Quilter Cheviot. You may be listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, YouTube, any of our respective organisations' websites, however you're listening. You're, as always, very welcome, but please don't forget to like and follow and subscribe and try and get any positive feedback to us. You can hit those buttons, presuming, of course, that you do find our little sessions useful. And we've had some feedback this week, I think, Charles, that, that people have been finding these things very positive. So that's nice to hear. Perhaps we'll return to that a bit later. We've got plenty to talk about this week. I'm going to dive straight in. First one is a report this week. I noted that more than three quarters of charities maintain their fundraising income over the past year. This is a third sector report, I think, which is a positive for the sector. Positive in two senses. More money is being raised last year, or at least maintained the same level of fundraising income. Great, which goes against the expectations, I think, from a previous, you know, a year ago that people were struggling. And indeed, for the future, for the next year, charity leaders seem to be quite positive. So, Catherine, ladies first, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, I thought fantastic. And it was so good to see a positive story, to see that it's not all doom and gloom. I think at times it's lazy journalism that is always a negative for the charity press. But what I did find interesting was from time to time, the Charity Commission send out surveys randomly to trustees. And I was chosen for one of my charities. I did the survey yesterday. And funnily enough, one of the questions, well, a series of the questions I thought was really negative, and maybe that's what they were trying to evaluate, but it was all kind of, what are your current challenges from this list of 10 things? What is your charity going to cut back on? You know, are you going to have to get rid of staff, reduce your services? Have you got fundraising challenges? Negative, negative, negative. And then there's an option or none of the above. And so for this particular charity, we're a grant-making charity, my answer was none of the above. And then it was, you know, what about the coming year? Are you going to have to make any of these things? And I said, no, none of the above. We're in a good place. So it's fascinating, I think, because, you know, the sector, as we know, is hugely varied, loads of different charities doing lots and lots of different things. So when we start to see that the sector is on its knees and, you know, everybody is going down the drain, it doesn't help. So I thought it was good to have some, you know, stats around this and some information and some positivity.
Yeah, I mean, the messaging was, you know, the charity leaders had greater awareness of their cause and its need for support, or there was a greater awareness rather, which is good. That means the messages are getting out and getting across. Clearly, the status of the economy is still a worry, understandably so. But some of the areas of improvement or growth in income were around events and activities, understandable. You know, people are getting back into this thing and also in corporate fundraising. Now, to my mind, both of those are very much within the purview, if you like, the control of the charity. It's great that, you know, you can go out and sell yourself at events and activities and to corporate fundraisers. I've talked about this many times. You know, make sure you make your best possible case to those that want to come and spend money with you in some way, shape or form. So that was all very positive as well. Charles, did you take anything extra from this?
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to read a positive story, particularly, you know, with everything else going on in the news. The bit for me that I was sort of thinking about was more about what it didn't do, of course, is differentiate between large, medium and smaller organisations, because I suspect there's a very different experience. And I do worry about, because of brand awareness and everything else, larger organisations taking a bigger slice of the pie. The other thing that I was quite not really related to this, but I happened to be at the large, what's called the Gathering, which is a charity conference in Scotland. And I was in conversation with one Mr. Gordon Brown, me and 300 other people. And it was a fascinating talk. But he had said, and just a quote, is that the top 1%, the sort of average or median salary is about £270,000 a year. And do you know what their average contribution to charity is? £570. That is quite a shocking figure, isn't it? And then he also went on to talk about the top 100 companies give less than 1% of earnings. And what I'd forgotten, of course, is that I think under the previous government, they had stopped companies from reporting about their charitable giving and activities. And I think there is a conversation here. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it, with particularly with companies, is they're not there to set up to give money to charity, etc. However, I know as an organisation, and you guys also have something similar where you've got your own foundations within the organisation and what benefit that brings to both staff and our wider contribution to community. So I mean, it's great to hear that things are that they're looking up and people are feeling more positive about it. But I think there's an awful lot more that could be done on those sorts of basis.
Yeah, I mean, the corporate giving, if you like, is I think there's going to be a bit of a battle coming up in the next couple of years. There's pushes and pulls in this. There's you know, the new American president is not keen on anything that is could even be suggested to be woke of any sort, and there is this push that, you know, companies are there to serve their stakeholders and make profits at the one end, and then of course at the other there is the employees factor. Employees want to work for companies that are good companies. You know, in general they are good employers, but they are particularly, you know, good activists in the world.
But there were some really simple things. So I have to say, although I don't always agree with Gordon Brown politically, but I mean he pointed out certain things. So I hadn't thought about, you know, there is a whole lot of surplus new goods that effectively doesn't get sold. So what happens to that? And it was very interesting because he was talking about food banks and then setting up, you know, banks to do white goods and furnitures and bed linen and clothing and everything else. And of course, the majority of it goes to either landfill or it gets incinerated, which is absolutely lunatic. And there's a VAT issue here, because if you send it to landfill or destroy it, you don't pay VAT. But if you give it to an organisation that distributes it to the poor, and let's not remember that it's about 25% of the population is deemed to be in poverty. You know, I mean, that's just is absolutely nuts. I mean, those are sorts of simple things of where companies have got excess goods they can't sell that could actually be put to good use, which are not, because we have a tax system that is working against them. And you just think, come on, we must be able to do something along those lines.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Next stories are linked, really. And they're two sides to a similar vein, really. Treat civil society as equal to businesses, report urges government. And this is a report by a number of, or a cooperative group of some sort, which asked a number of, again, charity leaders or leading organisations. The research was published by the think tank Future Governance Forum, partnership with New Philanthropy Capital and Lloyds Bank Foundation, calls for the government to afford civil society the same status as businesses. And as we've seen, the new covenant is being brought in by the new Labour government, wants to make more of the relationship. Now, that came out, and then only a few days later, the health secretary, Mr. Streeting, had a bit of a hot mic moment, we think, where he was particularly not very pleasant about organisations lobbying the government, described voluntary organisations as stakeholders, not partners, which was a bit of a slip, I think, really, and didn't go down very well after all the positivity that has come out of the Labour government and the new arrangements they want to bring in. So the reports were that he then went on to a chat with Macmillan Cancer Support and was much more conciliatory and was much more positive about things, but a little bit of a slip. Catherine, any thoughts on these two particularly linked stories, if you like?
It's interesting, isn't it, with Charles mentioning Gordon Brown as well. I'm sure he still has nightmares about his hot mic moment, but it's just, you know, politicians, I think, Get with it. You know, don't open your mouth to put your other foot in, because you know the government has done so much work about promoting the covenant and saying civil society is important to us, and then you know with one slip you can just cause so much offence. And I think you know the sector is smarter than that to realise we don't just like these sound bites if you're then going to be, you know, talking negatively about us in the next breath. And you know, and I thought the treating them equally as businesses, it was businesses and trade unions. And you think, well, yeah, so therefore why shouldn't civil society be in there? But I do think there at times needs to be a reality check that if you're going to ask for the moon on a stick on day one of a new government, particularly, you're not going to get it. And I think sometimes charities can be a bit naive rather than, you know, if you put a compelling case and, you know, try and approach it more as a win-win, then I think that there's more scope there to work with others.
Yeah, Charles, any thoughts?
Yeah, I have to say, I happened to be reading the Times, and there was one article that had got West Streeting fights charities over the NHS priorities, which got me reading. And then we got a report from Gareth Davis at the National Audit Office, where they had sort of stated that over the past 5 years, the number of procedures in the NHS had fallen by 35%, but the amount of money that was being given to it had gone up by 44%. So I thought that was whether the Times had deliberately done that. I mean, on the I have some sympathy for West Streeting because I think what he was trying to say was, you've got all of these charities, all who are passionate about the particular cause of medical issue that comes, and they're all in the air saying that this is a priority or whatever. And of course, he is the health secretary, and the NHS have actually got to decide of the limited resources about what they can spend it on and what there are. What I think needs to happen, and I'm hoping this will come through on the Labour governance covenant, is actually to sit down and work, and then explain what the priorities are and why they are the priorities, which there will be some charities will be very pleased with that, and there will be others who will be less pleased about it. But unfortunately, like all things, they won't have the money to be able to spend to the level that charities will do. But it doesn't stop charities from campaigning. It doesn't stop charities from thing. But I can you sort of get this sort of thought, isn't it? You're standing there and you're getting an awful lot of noise coming through both ears, trying to tell you that this should be a priority and here's why. And West Streeting, as the health secretary, is just having to make those decisions with the NHS about what it is they are going to prioritise.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Charles, but some of that coverage was about, and I think it was mentioned in the article about with McMillan Cancer Support, but Wes Streeting, I think, was talking about getting rid of these anti-diversity policies and becoming anti-woke and morphing slightly into an American vice president. Did that come through from what you were reading as well?
No, I didn't. I have to say, I didn't pick up on that particular element
Okay,
of it. I
perhaps
leave that
it's
to Rory Stewart and JD Vance, so having
perhaps
that
it perhaps it's
obviously
my own
works
interpretation. Yeah,
for
okay.
me.
Right. Again, turning to you, Charles, there was one article that I think you picked up about there's a new consultation about trusteeship, what it means to be trustees, and whether barriers to becoming trustees, how barriers to trustees could be removed. It's the Association of Chairs opened a consultation this last week, and I think they're planning on keeping it open until the end of April. So I suppose firstly we'd encourage everyone to go in and complete that, trustees or even non-trustees, if there's a reason aren't a trustee or don't want to be a trustee. Charles, any thoughts on that, having read the consultation?
Yeah, I mean, part of me sort of left having read it, thinking, "Oh God, why are they covering these issues? And really, do we need to turn this?" But actually, I think it I think it's a really good thing that they are asking the question. So things like paying trustees, And I think a figure that that somebody gave me is that 17,000 trustees out of the million or so that there are get paid, which I was sort of slightly surprised about. Taking paid leave, I think, again, here's something that government could help by encouraging companies that they give people paid leave to go off and do volunteering. I think that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. Again, I think you need to think about the size of the organisations. The bits that were also equally worrying is sort of developing qualifications and standards, having a sort of a charter for chartered things for chairs, a bit like chartered accountants and you know, things like chairs and treasurers and trustees. And there was a sort of whole professionalization. And then they go on to talk about benchmarking and accreditation improving charity governance. I always worry when somebody talks about improving charity governance, because that's just assuming it's bad in the first place. And certainly my experience, and I'm sure yours, is that most times it's actually pretty good. The bit that worries me the most is I think they're right to ask the questions. And there has obviously been a massive change between people who are retired to more people who are working, who are becoming trustees and volunteers. And we need to be able to give them the space to deal with it. But the professionalization of it will just, to me, narrow the audience, because they also talk about diversity and inclusion. And that to me is a complete oxymoron. If you're going to then ask people to become qualified to be trustees, the lovely thing about it at the moment is that anybody in the land can be a trustee, and all they have to do is you know, come and focus on what is in best of the beneficiaries that they're looking to serve.
Okay, Catherine, any thoughts?
And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? I mean, I don't like the whole, you're going to be a chartered chair, you're going to be a governance expert. I don't describe myself as a governance expert. So I'm, you know, particularly fearful of those that do use that title to think, you know, what right do we have to say that? And I think there's so much about its personality, its communication, its softer skills, and that doesn't come with going on a course. And there were some other bits. Yes, I mean, I think many employers do allow people to take 1, 2, 3 days off a year for volunteering. And the article talked about, you know, some people are taking 10 days holiday to go to trustee meetings. And I just thought, what on earth is that charity doing? Why on earth do you need 10 days a year that, you know, you're not being efficient in how you... So I would love it for people to actually respond, because maybe it would pop some of these assumptions that I think might be starting to percolate rather than being the reality.
But also, I think, sorry, there were just two things. Is that there was this whole thing about time poor. But I think if you want to do something, you find time. So you know, but I think there are things that could be accommodating. And the other thing about this paid trustees, and I feel really passionate about this, I mean, it'd be great. I mean, I could probably make a living out of it, potentially, if anybody had me on the board and pay me for doing so. But actually, there is no evidence in my mind that those that are paid boards, because they talk about local authorities and NHS and not-for-profit organisations that are not charities. And there is no evidence that you end up with a better board because it's paid. In fact, if anything, quite the reverse. And it's just that if you are a volunteer and you turn up and you're there passionate about it, generally you end up with some pretty good decisions. I you know, it's not broken, so why are we trying to fix?
Okay. I have to say that I would doubt very much that the consultation will give us any different answers than what we know already, which is, as you described earlier, Charles, we need different minds, different people, but it's got to be less intrusive and less onerous. And you've got to find alternative ways of getting people into trusteeship. And the old traditional methods and routes just aren't right at the moment.
They were also, James, asking a question of whether we should have an umbrella body representing trustees, which I thought, do we need another one? I mean, surely we've got, it could fall within the remit of an existing umbrella body, possibly even NCVO. Isn't that what their role is meant to be?
So you'd be asking trustees to not only do the 10 hours a month or whatever it was that Catherine referenced, but add another couple of hours on to go and sit on a trustee representative board as well.
And your continuous professional development that you'd need to do, and then you'd need to log it. So instead of your 10 days, it'd probably become 30 days.
Yeah, and then you're turning more people off. Right, last one is unfortunately got returned to the Captain Tom Foundation again. Catherine, they've changed the name. They've dropped Captain Tom's name from the foundation. I mean, the charity is intended to close anyway. So it's all, you know, it's another sad chunk of this story, isn't it, that's come about?
It really is, and it feels like death by a thousand cuts. It's just so desperately sad every time this comes around. I mean, the new name is atrocious. I mean,
well, it's just the charity number, isn't it?
Charity number foundation. I think, what on earth are you doing? Why would you do that? But I thought it was fascinating, the announcement from the charity itself. And this was quoted on the BBC. I was just checking the detail on this. And it talks about that the charity had acceded to the family's demand that they change the name. So this wasn't their idea. And it also talked about, the statement said, notwithstanding the Charity Commission's findings about the against the Ingram Moors, as well as their failure to rectify matters by returning the funds properly due to it, the Captain Tom Foundation considers it inappropriate to stand in the way of the family's wish regarding the use of the late Sir Captain Tom's name. The foundation has therefore acceded to the family's demand that it removes Captain Tom's name from its title. And I just think, how many more things can this family run ramshod over where the principles of charity law are absolutely clear? You do not receive personal benefit from a charity's assets. And I think this is all around the timing as well of the family securing the IP rights over the name just before they became trustees of the foundation, and then licensing that brand to the foundation, which is just, to my mind, so contrived. There's no goodwill, and it's just dreadful. And still, there is no repayment of the outstanding funds, which again makes you think, Charity Commission, you need to do something and get involved here.
Yeah, SPACs is one thing, that as you say, that there should be money that is owed to that charity, and closing it down, as trustees closing it down as quickly as they can and cutting all ties, does not seem to be the same as, you know, equivalent to getting that money back. Charles?
Well, I mean, you know, think back to Kids Company and the you know, how the trustees of Kids Company were pulled through the courts around a whole lot of issues, and which I was not a fan of, because I think that puts a lot of people off becoming a trustee. But I think in this instance, actually, the Charity Commission does need to stand up and do something, because this is clearly that there is private benefit being derived. This charity has been defrauded of money. The public that gave the money are being defrauded. And if the trustees of that charity can't or aren't prepared to do it, and I suspect they can't because they don't have the finances, this is where the regulator should be stepping in and doing something about it. And we should be finding the money to prosecute the Ingram Moors and get that money back, because otherwise it just sets a terrible precedent.
Yeah, I have to declare I have some skin in this game, because I bought one of his books, actually, for my son. One of his, which was a lovely book, but I bought it on the basis that the money was going to charity, no matter what anyone tells me.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. I think that's probably all we've got time for this week. We've covered an awful lot there. So thank you, Catherine. Thank you, Charles. And thank you to you, the listener, for tuning into this this episode of Charity Pulse. We hope you found our discussions and musings insightful. If you've got any questions or topics you'd like to cover us cover in future episodes, please do let us know. Whether you're a charity professional or a passionate volunteer or simply someone who cares about making a difference, we do try and make sure there's something here for you. Don't forget, please, to follow us and leave a review and share our podcast with your network. And do join us next time as we continue to look at the challenges and the opportunities facing non-profit sector organisations. Thanks very much. Bye-bye for now.